Welcome to First Things First. It is a rainy Monday in New York. It does not matter. We are coming off a great weekend of football. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is Nick Wright. That is not Chris Carter. It is, however, Chris Canty.
Still got the CC thing going.
You still got the CC thing. I only have to remember one name, which is good. CC got stuck in Miami after the game he called.
The longest game in NFL history.
7 hours that thing was delayed.
Literally the longest game in NFL history, but he'll be here later.
He's going to join us remotely.
Thank you for filling in, brother.
Yeah, we got Chris Canty here to stick around.
Your hair looks particularly lovely today,
Jenna. Thank you so much.
You're very
welcome. As does yours. Yours.
Thank you, Jenna.
The love. All right, we are going to start with one of the most epic performances you will ever see in the National Football League. It was the Packers. It was the Bears. And it was because of one of the best to ever play the game. Early scare for Aaron Rodgers, though, as he had to be carted off the field in the second quarter with a leg injury. Came back with his team down 20. He's like, what? I got to do this? Well, he did. He lit it up, throwing 3 second-half touchdown passes, including the game winner to Randall Cobb, with just over 2 minutes left in the game, all while still hobbled with that injured leg. Aaron Rodgers talking about his epic performance after the win over the Bears.
This is what we're paid to do. You know, we're paid to deal with injuries and play through them. That's what everybody's doing and will be doing throughout this season. That's the measure of a teammate, is what are you willing to put on the line for your team. And to me, it's a no-brainer. Being out there is special. The ovation from the crowd lifts you up, gives the energy, the momentum of the game, and you feel the tide turning is special. This is definitely go down as one of my favorite memories. Playing behind Brett Favre for 3 years, you realize you gotta be tough to play this position. So you get a situation. It's about coming back out and leading, and if you can do it and deal with the pain, you should be out there.
So, guys, Aaron Rodgers comes out and says, this is what we're paid to do. Aaron Rodgers, of course, just getting paid to do just this, and this is how he comes out and responds. But how remarkable was what he did last night in the situation, given that he was injured, and the situation during the game being down 20 points, was it?
Remarkable is a perfect word, because it was absolutely remarkable. It was not unbelievable. Yeah. It was totally believable because of who this guy is. We had a conversation a few months ago about whether or not we're in almost the golden era of sports goats or near goats. LeBron, Serena, Bolt, Phelps, Messi, Federer, Brady, Rodgers.
Yeah.
Like, he is in that class. Mm-hmm. He's on that list of greatest to ever do something, doing it in his prime. And to see him out there hobbled. I thought they did a great job on the broadcast of showing the side-by-side of his dropbacks and how pre-injury his dropback looked like this, post-injury his dropback looked like that. And for him to make that throw is make-believe, Canty.
Yeah.
That throw is across your body on a bad foot, 50 yards, couldn't have handed it to Geronimo Allison better. And he and Brady are the only quarterbacks in my adult life that could be in this situation down 17 late, and I'm like, well, you know, if they score here, I actually like their chances. That's what he is. He's the best player in the league. He's been the best player in the league for quite some time now, and he showed it last night while hobbled. It was spectacular.
Well, here's the thing, Nick, and you're absolutely right. It is spectacular, and there are only a handful of quarterbacks that can make that throw to Geronimo Allison, drop it in the bucket just like that. But, Jenna, you asked the question, how remarkable is it? They've been playing football 100 years. The Green Bay Packers, it's their 100th year in franchise history. They've never had a larger fourth quarter comeback.
Yep.
Never. It hadn't happened. So that tells you the level that Aaron Rodgers is on. And I'm looking at that game last night, and I said, if you're going to invest this kind of money in this quarterback that's capable of leading this type of comeback, you would think that Mike McCarthy in the front office of the Green Bay Packers, after having your star quarterback come off a shoulder injury that ended his season a year before, you would do a better job of protecting him. Whether it's personnel, whether it's scheme, you would think that that would be a focal point going into this offseason. Now, it looked like the offensive line cleaned up some of the protection issues that they had in the first half, but I think that was coupled with the Chicago Bears taking their foot off the gas a little bit. There was a little little bit of relax in that group. They weren't as aggressive in the second half, and I'm not for the life of me understanding why Vic Fangio didn't call more pressures, more blitzes, especially in the middle of the pocket. Aaron Rodgers was dealing with a left leg injury, and he wasn't trying. His mobility was clearly compromised. I don't understand why they didn't try to go after him a little more, but it seems like the Chicago Bears left the door open for Aaron Rodgers to start that comeback.
Up to and including on the 3rd and 10 that Randall Cobb ends up taking 70-plus for a touchdown, Khalil Mack is in coverage. Like, really? That's not what you paid him $131 million for. What you paid him $131 million for was what he was doing throughout the first half. Go get the quarterback. But one of the reasons you said the protection issues got cleaned up, I don't know if that was better offensive line play or if that was in the second half. Rodgers took the game out of McCarthy and the staff's hands. They went more no huddle. It was more Aaron Rodgers getting the line of scrimmage. What does he see? And getting the ball out quickly. He was magnificent in that situation once they started going hurry up. In the second half, he was what? 17 of 23 for 273 yards and 3 touchdowns. You're talking about needing to get him help. How about help at backup quarterback, which he hasn't had for the last few years? Rodgers asked them, essentially, can you guys hold the fort for 15 minutes? I'll be back. Can you keep it together for 15 minutes?
15 minutes.
In those 15 minutes, DeShone Kizer, who was the most turnover-prone player in the league last year, had one fumble where Khalil just took the ball from him. That took 3 points away from the Packers because that was a gimme field goal. And then at the end of the half, partly on Kizer, partly on the play call, it's 40 seconds left. You're on your own 25. The other team has no timeouts. You just run the ball, go to halftime, get Rodgers back, hopefully. They call a screen pass to Khalil Mack. That ain't great because he's on the other team. And now all of a sudden Rodgers has to have an epic comeback, which he, of course, ended up orchestrating.
You know, there were so many storylines coming into this game. It was the rivalry. It was Khalil Mack coming back. It was Aaron Rodgers back on the field. And then, yet, at the end, the story became what this guy did being injured. How concerned are you both with that leg and what you saw and how he had to sort of overcome it and deal with it? You saw it was obviously bothering him during the game.
Well, I'm concerned a little bit long-term because what makes Aaron Rodgers special is just the ability to be able to use his legs to extend plays and give his receivers time to uncover downfield. Now, all the heroics that Aaron Rodgers showed in that second half, and particularly that fourth quarter, I say the Chicago Bears left the door open because on that last scoring drive, Kendall Fuller could have intercepted the pass and the game would have been over. It would have been curtains for the Green Bay Packers. So for all of the things that Aaron Rodgers did in the second half, I feel like this game was more about the Chicago Bears relaxing, knowing that they had a 17-point lead going into the fourth quarter in Lambeau Field. And you can't relax when you have a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers.
Which against anyone else, maybe it's okay. But Rodgers and Brady, those are the only two you really aren't going to relax.
Well, this is the one knock on Rodgers for a long time was lack of fourth quarter comebacks. Mm-hmm. Now, it was kind of misleading. One of the reasons was he wasn't trailing in the fourth quarter very often. Another reason was for a fourth quarter comeback, you need fourth quarter stops, and his team hadn't been great at getting those. But now in the last 4 years, there are four instances league-wide of 20-point second half comebacks. Two by Aaron Rodgers, two by everybody else in the league. So that what was a weakness of his theoretically has become a strength. But you mentioned the Fuller dropped pick. I can't believe the broadcast crew didn't spend more time on this. The Bears had, they were calling it a 3rd and 1. It was really a 3rd and 2. When a first down ends the game, you can take knees from there. Not only do they don't run it on 3rd down, and they don't even consider going for it on 4th down. You're up 3. They kick a field goal on 4th and 1. Instead, if you get the first down, the game's over. You kick the field goal, guess what? A touchdown still beats you. Mm-hmm. The moment you kick that field goal, you've got to know, man, the Packers became a favorite. Though if Rodgers got the ball back, they were going to be a favorite. And for the Bears staff to be so aggressive early, and then the entire second half, Trubisky turns into check down Trubisky,
no doubt.
Didn't it feel to you on the Bears side of things like the Jags-Pats playoff game? Where for the scripted plays, those first 20 or so plays, the Jags were moving the football. Trubisky and the Bears offense looked awesome. Matt Nagy, first-year head coach, moving the football. But as soon as the script ran out and you had to actually call a game, they were brutal. They had no movement of the football. If not for the Khalil Mack touchdown, this team would have stayed at 16 points for the game. I mean, their offense was absolutely inept after they got through the first quarter.
Yeah, what you're talking about is 62 passing yards by Mitchell Trubisky in the second half, which is unacceptable. You drafted the kid second overall a year ago to develop into a quarterback that was able to elevate the play of everybody around him, but also be able to win in situational football. And the Chicago Bears offense didn't do that in the second half. Now, what I don't understand is why Matt Nagy took his foot off the gas play calling wise, why they weren't as aggressive in the second half as you were in the first half. Because you got to know, when Aaron Rodgers steps back on that field, they're going to put some points on the board. You're not going to hold the Green Bay Packers to just a field goal for the entire game. So you have to understand, you still have to be aggressive and score points. But when that complexion of the game started to tilt after the Geronimo Allison touchdown pass, it just felt like momentum was with Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers, and there was nothing the Bears could do to stop that.
But despite all that, their one sustained drive of the second half was at the end. You have Jordan Howard gash him for 10 yards on second and 12. You have third and a yard and a half. You have two chances to get 2 yards to win the game, and they throw it. They get aggressive one time in the second half. Yeah. They throw a pass to Tariq Cohen instead of running Howard, and then they kick a field goal, and not surprisingly, the best player in the world goes down and beats
you. I don't understand it. Vic Fangio, you got to sweep the leg. Tell your defense to sweep the leg. No mercy. You got Aaron Rodgers compromised. You can't let the Packers off the hook.
All right, it's the reason why this is a very storied rivalry. It was the Packers over the Bears. Much more to discuss with that game. Coming up on the other side, though, why did the Dallas Cowboys offense struggle in week one? Back here, first things first, we're going to get to Cowboys and Dak Prescott in a second, but first, Aaron Rodgers returning from the locker room last night to throw a beautiful pass to Geronimo Allison for the touchdown. Unforgettable night for Rodgers.
And while this was a throw only Rodgers can make in the league, well, maybe him and Patty Mahomes, that's a hell of a catch by Geronimo Allison.
Yeah,
that's a hell of a catch.
Yeah, he just put Kyle Fuller on a poster just now. That's unbelievable play right there.
And that was the moment I was like, I think the Packers are going to win this game.
Seahawks, Chris Carson gets the handoff. Watch what happens next. Just clears a Broncos defender for a 24-yard gain.
And watch this. It looks like that looks photoshopped there because he just keeps raising. Yeah. He just, the slow-mo from behind, he just keeps rising in the air.
What is Bradley Roby doing right there? Don't cut tackle him. Try to get the guy on the ground. You can't go like that, even though you're a corner.
New NFL rules, man. He's trying to go low.
No,
Bucks Saints, and what a game for Ryan Fitzpatrick, just slinging it all day. This one-handed diving catch by Chris Godwin was incredible.
Jen, I know we've had a lot of post-show meetings about trying to cut down on some corny puns, but you can call him Fitzmagic today. He was Fitzmagic.
Stop it.
What do you mean, stop it?
Stop it.
He was great.
He was great. Fitzpatrick is great in a small sample size.
That's what they said about Case Keenum. That's all I'm going to say. By the way,
they were right. Did you see that?
Exactly.
Oh, my goodness.
All right, finally, fastest man in the NFL, Nick. Tyreek Hill with an unbelievable catch. What an adjustment. He ended the game with 3 touchdowns. Chiefs beat the Chargers.
Go ahead.
I was more impressed with the end cut that he took to the house. I mean, he separated from everybody on the Chargers defense.
Oh, we'll have more on that later, but this is noteworthy because everyone knew he was fast, but going up and getting it, I once knew a man who said he wasn't a number one receiver. That man's name might be Chris Carter.
Wow.
Eat that, CC, in Miami.
All right, moving on to the Dallas Cowboys. After weeks of analyzing, and some might say over-analyzing what the Cowboys had on offense, they kicked off the season with a loss to the Carolina Panthers. Ezekiel Elliott had a decent performance, running for 69 yards and a touchdown. But quarterback Dak Prescott couldn't get it going, throwing for only 170 yards while being sacked 6 times. Dak downplayed the loss after the game.
The first game, we got a lot of ball left to play. We got a good team in that locker room, and we fought the fight tonight. So excited for what we can learn from this game and move forward.
Okay, Chris, we've talked for weeks about what the Cowboys were going to do on offense, who they were going to throw the ball to, how hard they were going to ride Ezekiel Elliott. How concerning was the offense after this loss to the Panthers?
Well, it's a little bit concerning just because you knew that going into this game, the Carolina Panthers were going to take away Ezekiel Elliott. Nick, you were right, no pun intended. But, I mean, you knew that Dak Prescott was going to have to make some plays in the passing game, particularly outside of the numbers. But Dak Prescott showed a lack of awareness in the pocket. He wasn't able to feel the rush. He started looking down at the guys coming to tackle him rather than keeping his eyes downfield at his receivers. And through no fault of his own, those guys couldn't get open to save their lives. And that's really where you have to start with the blame from the Dallas Cowboys not having a good performance yesterday. The front office didn't do a great job of replacing the talent that walked out of the door with Dez Bryant and Jason Witten. I appreciate what Deontay Thompson, my former teammate, was out there trying to do yesterday, but Allen Hurns, Tavon Austin, those guys didn't come to the party. They've got to be able to help their quarterback by being able to get open in one-on-one coverage. Ezekiel Elliott can only do so much when he's running up against 8 and 9 man fronts. It comes down to those receivers being able to win one-on-ones. And if you're in an NFL uniform, if you're consistently getting one-on-ones, at some point you've got to be able to win those. The Dallas Cowboys skill position players weren't able to do that yesterday.
Sometimes we spend all week talking about a game, and then I watch the game and I feel like an idiot because I'm like, okay, everything I thought was going to happen didn't happen, and I got it exactly wrong.
No, not yesterday.
And sometimes I watch a game and said, oh, that's exactly what we said, that if there was any game on the schedule where Zeke is going to struggle, it was going to be yesterday.
Yeah, that's what you
there
said.
Was any game on the schedule where it would have to be about plays on the outside, it was going to be yesterday, and the Cowboys were not up to the challenge. Zero big plays. Zero plays greater than 20 yards. In the entire NFL game.
Yep.
Only 3 plays greater than 15 yards in the entire game. That's awful. And I understand Carolina has a good defense, but it is not, forget the 85 Bears, it's not even the 2015 Broncos. Like, it's a good defense,
yep.
A very good NFL defense, particularly up front. But to have that level of ineptitude, and for Dak to be under duress more than any other quarterback in the league yesterday, no quarterback was sacked a higher percentage of times than Dak yesterday. He was sacked 6 times, one of the most of his career as a Cowboy, and Dak wasn't up to the challenge. And I understand the receivers didn't help him out, but there were also some skipped balls, some balls that went high. And now I've got to ask myself and ask anybody, like, how good's Dak? It's a fair question to ask. It's not a one-game sample. We can go the last 10 games. Take out, he had a great game against the Giants in December of last year. Here's his passing yards in the games surrounding it and since then. 145, 179, 102, 212, 181, 179, 170. Like, in the last half of those games, he had Dez, he had Witten until yesterday. Like, Dak has not shown me that he can even be an above average NFL quarterback unless the situation is perfect. All 5 your offensive linemen healthy and playing at 3 of them an all-pro level. Your running back giving you 100 a game, and as you pointed out, 1,100 on first down, so you're always in 2nd and 4. Like, at some point, Dak Prescott needed to, in that game, make some type of big play, and he was unable to. Part of that's on the receivers, but part of that's on Dak.
Would Dak Prescott have had a better game if he had better receivers? Was it about receivers getting separation, or was it about Dak not being able to deal with the pressure?
Well, I think it's about the receivers getting separation. That was the biggest issue. But when it comes to Dak Prescott, there were times at the end of that game where he put himself in bad situations. You look at the last possession that they had on the sack fumble by Mario Addison. He essentially sacked himself because the offensive line picked up the twist stunt, but he moved outside of the pocket and he went right into the pressure. Mario Addison tracked him down from behind and forced the strip sack. Those are the types of plays where I scratch my head and I wonder, is Dak Prescott a quarterback that's going to be worthy of a $100+ million contract in the offseason? Because that's the decision that the Dallas Cowboys are going to be faced with. Keep in mind, they don't have a 5th-year option on Dak. So, and he's going into his 4th season of contract year. They've got to make a decision about his future and what they're going to do at the quarterback position. But it's clear to me in watching yesterday's game that Ron Rivera made sure that his defense got the message. We're going to keep the Dallas Cowboys offense off schedule. We're not going to allow 2nd and 6 or better. We're not going to allow 3rd and 3 or better. We're going to put them in long downs and distances.
And it works.
And that's exactly what happened. And you saw that Dak Prescott wasn't able to make the plays, wasn't able to extend drives. 2 of 11 on 3rd down.
They didn't get the ball past the 50 until the 2nd half. All right? Like, they didn't run their first play in Carolina territory until the 2nd half. The Dallas defense did its job. Cam was under duress. They were injuring Panthers, not intentionally, but they lose the right tackle. Greg Olsen's in a walking boot. Mm-hmm. Like, Cam did as much as he could have given the circumstances. But if I tell you you're going to hold the Panthers to 16, The answer can't be we score eight. Like, I mean, it just can't be. They even the Panthers let them off the hook with the right guard blocked his own snap on the extra point.
Yep.
So instead of being 17-0 and the game essentially being over, it's 16-0 and you can squint hard enough and say, oh, two touchdowns, two two-point conversions, we're there. But they never had a semblance of an offensive flow. And, yes, of course, Dak, they have totally unproven, dare I say, less than mediocre wide receivers. But there wasn't a lot of balls that I saw yesterday. I'm like, man, Dak placed it perfectly, mm-hmm. and that receiver just couldn't come down with the catch. Like, it was both parties at fault for the Cowboys' offense being so inept. And Zeke wasn't amazing, but 4.5 a carry against that defense with a touchdown. Like, Zeke did about as good as I thought he could do against that defense. Mm-hmm. The passing game was horrible.
All right, so the Cowboys dropped their season opener. A lot of questions surrounding Dak Prescott. Coming up on the other side, Tom Brady still getting it done at age 41. That's next on First Things First. Big college football game coming your way. USC against Texas. Always fireworks when these two square off. That's Saturday at 8 Eastern on Fox and on the Fox Sports app.
Old UT and Tom Herman squeaked out a win against Tulsa this week. Now they got USC to come beat their heads in. Excited to watch it.
Back here on First Things First.
Texas
going viral.
Just right.
Check out Shaquille and Shaquem Griffin hugging their mom before the game in Denver on Sunday. Really sweet moment here.
There was also a moment where there was a young man who had the same congenital birth defect as Shaquem, who was at the game, and Shaquem came over and spent some time with him. It was a really cool moment, and got to be so cool for that mom.
Oh, to have both of her kids playing football
brothers to be able to play on the same team and go after it and go get it. Playing on defense. That's awesome.
Absolutely. That was really
cool.
That's
awesome.
Really, really cool.
All right, time now for some stories to start your morning. The Bucs surprised the Saints with a 48-40 win behind 417 yards passing and 5 total touchdowns from Harvard's Ryan Fitzpatrick. Chris, how much did this surprise you?
It surprised everybody in the National Football League.
Looking
at what was going on in the Superdome, I thought it was a basketball game, not a football game. Who would have thought 100 points would be scored in this game? But if you tell me that Drew Brees would only have 8 incompletions, I would tell you that they were going to win that game. But, I mean, Ryan Fitzpatrick came to play, DeSean Jackson and Mike Evans.
All right, so the Saints haven't won an opener in 5 years. Remember last year they started 0-2 before they turned their whole season around. What's concerning for the Saints is that this looked like the defense of the 3 years prior to last year. For the Bucs, you know who probably didn't like watching that? Jameis Winston.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we saw you have Mike Evans, who's the big, great number one, DeSean Jackson, who's an elite speed threat. We saw what that passing offense can look like. Again, Fitzpatrick, probably next game will throw
500 total yards of offense, though, Nick.
Man, and a great first down run to ice the game. Fitz magic.
Moving on to Andrew Luck's debut.
Another team.
He threw for 319 yards and 2 touchdowns, but the Colts weren't able to get the win over the Bengals. Nick, what'd you make of Andrew Luck's performance?
Man, they certainly weren't easing him back into it. You know who threw the most passes of anybody in football yesterday? That guy, Andrew Luck.
Yep.
He also, early in the game, took a brutal shot where they ejected the safety, Sean Williams, and they should have ejected the safety, Sean Williams. Old rule, new rule, doesn't matter. It was a brutal helmet-to-helmet shot. I thought Luck was fine. He actually better than fine. He fine as far as health goes. Performance, pretty damn good. Colts just aren't that good, and Jack Doyle killed him with that fumble at the end.
Dearest mother, the Tiger Men proved to be too much on Sunday for me, even though I trust my sidearm. No, you know what? Here's the thing. Andrew Luck is going to be Andrew Luck. The Colts offense is going to improve as he gets more experience in this regular season, gets his feet back under him. But their defense is awful, and that's really what it comes down to. They couldn't stop anybody, and Andy Dalton and the Bengals took advantage of it.
All right, moving on to Kirk Cousins' Vikings debut. He threw for 2 touchdowns and 244 yards in the win over the 49ers. Chris, is that what you expected to see out of Cousins?
Absolutely. I mean, Kirk Cousins probably has the most pressure on him than any other quarterback around the National Football League just because their team got to the NFC Championship game, and they've decided that they were going to replace the quarterback that was there for Kirk Cousins. He's got to help them get to the big game, and it starts by being able to win as many games in the regular season so you can try to get home field advantage. But that one throw that he had to Stephon Diggs, he dropped it in the bucket. I mean, that's why you paid Kirk Cousins all that money, for that throw right there. That's $84 million guaranteed.
Kirk Cousins played very well, and the thing that he's going to enjoy this year is he doesn't even have to play quite as well as he did yesterday most weeks, because that Vikings defense looks as legit as they were last season. They gave Jimmy G fits all game long.
All right, same game here to the other side of the ball. Jimmy Garoppolo struggled in his season debut. Someone said he might. Throwing three picks in the loss. Nick, what did you make of Jimmy G's struggles yesterday?
I mean, this is a guy who not only just six starts with San Francisco, but just seven touchdown passes going into yesterday's game. You're going up against one of the best defenses. You, much like Dak, don't have a lot of weapons. Jimmy G looked like a young quarterback against a great defense. It's one of the reasons why I was skeptical when they said, hey, Jimmy G, highest paid player in the league, at least for the moment he was. I think you're going to see more games like this. I think the jury is still absolutely out on Jimmy Garoppolo. I wasn't sold after the half dozen games last year. Now, I don't think he's as bad as he was yesterday, but I think you're going to see games like this.
I think that was a product of playing against an elite defense more so than Jimmy Garoppolo being a fraud, because I trust what I saw last year in the five starts that he had. They went 5-0. We had a sample size of what the 49ers were with him as the starting quarterback and him with not being the starting quarterback. So I trust that. But some of the decisions that he made yesterday are head scratchers, like that interception that he threw at the end of the game to Harrison Smith. Who are you throwing the ball to? It's triple coverage. Who are you throwing the ball to? You can't have your $127.5 million quarterback make those type of decisions.
Yep.
All right, finally, the Chicago Bears seem to be cashing in on the Khalil Mack trade. He had a strip sack and a pick six in the loss to the Packers. Chris Caney, how impressed were you with Mack's performance?
I mean, Khalil Mack was trying to win defensive MVP in one game. Yep. I mean, one half of football. I mean, him taking the ball away from DeShone Kizer, the constant pressure that he put on Aaron Rodgers. That sack on Aaron Rodgers where he got knocked out of the game in the first half, that was Khalil Mack. Now, I know somebody else got credit for it, but that was really a product of the pressure that Khalil Mack was putting on Brian Bulaga and on Aaron Rodgers. So I look at Khalil Mack as somebody that's a transformative type of player. That defense just took a step from going to a good defense to an elite defense, and I think they'll continue to grow. You saw Roquan Smith get in there on his first play, have a sack, but that's, again, because of Khalil Mack being able to apply that kind of pressure. He changes everything defensively for that team. He actually improves the team just because they have an opportunity to be a dominant defense. That's going to help the offensive side of the ball, too. Khalil Mack is worth every penny that Ryan Pace and the Chicago Bears decided to pay him.
Khalil Mack did not go to training camp this year. Khalil Mack got traded 9 days ago, and he steps in, and for at least the first half, he's not only the best player on the field. For that first half of football, he was the best player in the league. He had played up to halftime better than anybody had played. T.J. Watt had a great game. Von Miller had a great game. We saw some offense. No. He had been the best player in the league. Now, you saw some of the stamina issues. He was on a bit of a pitch count because he hadn't been in training camp, and the Packers going no huddle and hurry up took him out of the game a bit in the second half. But this is why you don't trade a player this good. And Chris Collinsworth slipped something in the broadcast. Now, maybe Khalil Mack's recreating history, but I'm going to take him at his word. Chris Collinsworth said on the broadcast, I asked Khalil Mack, if John Gruden had called you and said, listen, man, you are our guy, you are our best player, we are never moving you, let's work this out, would that have made a difference? And according to Collinsworth, Mack said, yeah, it would have. Well, that's a phone call Gruden's going to regret. I would say for his 10 years in Oakland, but for what might be his 3 or 4 years in Oakland.
Wow.
Because I don't know how much further he'll make it. Like, you can't get rid of a player like that and get fair value. You just can't. To see him, if people hadn't been watching the Raiders a lot, because they weren't on national TV a ton, their West Coast team, like, he is so big. Like, to be able to move the way he can, and those two plays he made, the flash plays, the strip and the pick, that's what separates him from other excellent pass rushers. Like DeMarcus Lawrence, let me use him. I know he's only had 1 year of it, but he's an excellent pass rusher. But he does one thing, right? He gets to the quarterback. Khalil's ability, he took the ball, just took it from DeShone Kizer. Then the interception and the touch, like to finish the interception, not stumbling, not getting caught, but to score. And on the, if people will miss this, on the 75-yard Randall Cobb play, The person who comes the closest to tracking him down right before he gets to the end zone is Khalil Mack, who ran across the field and almost caught Randall Cobb. This guy is an elite athlete amongst elite athletes. Of course, he changes everything for Chicago.
And we weren't even talking about the Bears before Khalil Mack was traded there as anything, a contender, a force to be reckoned with. And it's rare to have a guy who can join a team and make such an impactful difference that you're actually considering them now as a team to watch. All right, Absolutely. Moving on to the Patriots and the Texans, Tom Brady and Deshaun Watson. Deshaun Watson struggled, completing only half of his passes and turning the ball over twice in the Texans' loss. Tom Brady was Tom Brady, even a 41, didn't miss a beat in week one, throwing for 277 yards and three touchdowns. Brady said after the game, New England can be even better than that moving forward.
I don't think we played, you know, anywhere near what our capabilities are. So I think it's good to win, obviously, but you know, we got to do a lot better than that. I think just turn the ball over and not take advantage of some opportunities that we had out there. All of us probably look at the game and realize we could have done a lot of things differently.
I think it was terrible on my part. So you can just – I just feel like you can put the L on me because I'd be way much better than what I showed today. Just my energy was low and just overthinking little things. But, you know, we just got to capitalize in the red zone. Don't turn the ball over and just kind of continue to do what we do. Take it one play at a time, be on the same page, and just go from there.
Nick, this wasn't a game that should have been an obvious Patriots win. This was a sort of scaled-down Patriots offense going up against a very good and healthy, for a change, Texans defense. Were you impressed by what the Patriots did in their win?
Absolutely. Their ability to keep Tom Brady clean for the most part. I mean, he was sacked twice, only hit five times, compared to, by the way, Deshaun, who was hit a dozen times in the game. I thought that was impressive. We knew that Gronk, this is the difference between Belichick and everybody else, and certainly Belichick and O'Brien. Belichick knows what you want to do going into a game and takes it away from you. Other coaches know what you want to do going into a game and seemingly make it easier for you. Mm-hmm. We knew their option was going to be Gronk first, Gronk second, Gronk third, and nobody could stop him. And the Texans also, by the way, made mistake after mistake. And Deshaun, I appreciate Deshaun taking responsibility, because while his coach did him no favors, he did have a brutal game. He fumbled on his first touch. He missed a touchdown on fourth down. He had a bad interception. But the Patriots took advantage of all of it. And the Patriots continue to say, oh, okay, Philip Dorsett, you're a washed-out first-round pick who's never had a – you've had one big game in your career. What are we going to do with you? Okay, seven catches, that's a career high. 66 yards, that's the second most of your career, or third most of your career, pardon me, and a touchdown.
Nick, do you think that was the plan going in?
I think the plan going in is we will see what you're giving us, and we will take advantage of it. Mm-hmm. And we have spent this entire offseason making sure we are only going to ask Philip Dorsett to do what he's comfortable with. So now he's going to look like a legitimate NFL receiver. And so the Pats, like, yeah, Brady played a great game because, of course, he did. And they took advantage of the Texans' mistakes.
Yeah, it's not just Philip Dorsett, though, Nick, it's all the players on the Patriots. That's what Bill Belichick does better than any coach in the National Football League. He only asks his guys to do things that they're good at, and he keeps them out of situations where their deficiencies can be exposed. And on the other side of that coin, he always puts your guys in situations where they have to do things that they're not good at. You mentioned it. You know that Rob Gronkowski is the number one wide receiver for Tom Brady going into yesterday's game. You figure you're going to have to stop him, but yet somehow, some way, they can't get it done. Now, Bill O'Brien did him a favor at the end of the first half by not calling a timeout and giving the officials an opportunity to get the buzz from the booth.
That might have been a 7-point mistake.
That was a 7-point mistake.
That wasn't a catch. It wasn't a catch. At any review, it would have been overturned. The Pats intelligently rushed the line. It's inside 2 minutes, so you can't challenge. But what you can do if you realize, by the way, the ref screwed it up and the replay review screwed it up. Yep. They screwed it up first. But in case of emergency, break glass. Yeah. You're Bill O'Brien, you have three timeouts, you're not going to use them. You went to half with three timeouts. Once you see they're not going to buzz it and the Pats get the line, call timeout so then they have time to review it. And Bill O'Brien, again,
You said it last week.
I said going into the game that he will cost you points in these situations. He said after the game, standoffishly, that's not my job. Nah, bro, literally, you're the only person whose job it is.
Game management is a head coach's responsibility.
And you're the only person allowed to call timeout aside from the players.
Yep.
And the players aren't supposed to call timeout in that spot because they think they need a review. They're supposed to rely on the coach. But the game management there, you cost your maybe 7 points there. And then at the end of the game, the guy punted away. Down 14 with 4.5 minutes left. You can't win games like this. The NFL's too hard with too many excellent teams and great coaches to have a guy consistently kneecap you on game day. And so Deshaun didn't look right, by the way. That is the other big story of the game. There were some times where last year there was a seam and he would have run through it. He did not seem comfortable. His throws seemed off, and he did not seem comfortable on the knee, most notably. Now, I think that'll get better, but the Texans are sunk if he's not great. We knew he wouldn't be as great as he was last year, but we're seeing him miss throws. But the thing that's frustrating to me is the 23-year-old kid took full accountability at the podium.
Yes.
The Texans coach says, not my job, on something that cost your team, in my eyes, a touchdown and totally changed the complexion of the football
game.
Were
you also concerned a little bit with what you saw from Deshaun Watson or some of that perhaps being maybe he's a little gun-shy to get out there and give 100% just for fear that he might hurt himself again? And is that something that just comes with time?
Well, I anticipated that he wouldn't be 100% recovered from the knee injury. I mean, he's less than a year removed from ACL reconstruction, and it usually takes a year before you start to feel like yourself. So I'm not surprised that he struggled a little bit, but the things that I said Deshaun Watson couldn't do, which is turning the football over, the fumble, the interception, those mistakes can't happen if the Texans were going to go into Foxborough and win. It's hard to win in Foxborough when you're not winning a turnover battle. And so that's the one thing that I'm looking at with this team. They didn't extend drives, 2-11 on third downs. Those were the things that Deshaun Watson was going to have to do if this team was going to be competitive. I thought the defense did enough. I'm not going to say they had a great outing, but they did enough. I just felt like offensively it was so bad that they couldn't overcome that, and ultimately they couldn't get the win.
Quickly, the two things we were worried about with the Pats all offseason offensively, who's going to catch passes? Well, they had 9 different guys catch passes, and how good's the offensive line? Against a very good, healthy pass rush, they kept Brady clean throughout. 2 sacks, only 5 hits to the quarterback. Trent Brown, who's kind of been pressed into duty at left tackle, I thought he played a good game. And so credit to the Pats. Like Mangini always talks about the O-line coach, Scarnecchia. We've all talked about how they will find wide receivers wherever, and they seem to have done it at least for a week once again.
Who's going to catch passes? Everyone's catching. You catch them all. You catch them all. We got to take a break. Coming up, Aaron Rodgers leads a comeback for the ages. That's next on First Things First. Welcome back to First Things First. Super Bowl champion Greg Jennings is here. What's up, Greg?
Jennings, good to see you, sir.
Let me just set the scene for you guys. We're here in New York City. It is cold. It feels like fall. Football just happened yesterday. We got Chris Caney and Greg Jennings here. Feels good.
Feels good. Absolutely.
Feels right.
Good to see you.
It is right. It is right.
Awesome. Chris Carter will be back and we'll be here in 40 minutes, by the way.
Yeah, Chris is in Miami. He didn't make it back because his game lasted 127 hours.
Literally the longest game in NFL history.
Literally, for
first
real.
Game ever calling, longest game in NFL history.
I felt
history.
For him, too. I'm like, man. Yeah. Initially, I thought he's going to get back. Then, second one.
But we'll have him 8 o'clock.
Concessions people were happy, though.
Yes. Without question.
Greg, as a former Packer, I'm sure this was a game you enjoyed watching, a storied NFL rivalry between said Packers and Bears added another interesting chapter. Aaron Rodgers suffered what looked like a devastating leg injury in the second quarter. He had to be carted off the field. He returned with the Packers trailing by 20. Thanks, guys. And mounted a comeback of the ages, throwing 3 second half touchdown passes, 17 unanswered points, possibly the best quarterback we have ever seen since spoke after one of his best performances ever.
This is what we're paid to do. You know, we're paid to deal with injuries and play through them. That's what everybody's doing and will be doing throughout this season. That's the measure of a teammate, is what are you willing to put on the line for your team. And to me, it's a no-brainer. Being out there is special. The ovation from the crowd lifts you up, gives you the energy, the momentum of the game, and you feel the tide turning. Is special. This is definitely go down as one of my favorite memories. Playing behind Brett Favre for 3 years, you realize got to be tough to play this position. So you got to, in that situation, it's about coming back out and leading. And if you can do it and deal with the pain, you should be out there.
Greg, this game was only about a half hour old, and Aaron Rodgers already called it one of his greatest memories ever as a football player. How remarkable was what you saw last night out of Aaron Rodgers?
It was very remarkable. I was beyond impressed. Like, the price of admission at Lambeau Field was well worth it. I mean, when you saw him go down, the team was deflated. The fans were back into last season, reminded of what the season looked like. Everything kind of just went out the window. He comes back, and what he said in that interview was what I thought about. Number one, Aaron Rodgers is so competitive, but he mentioned Brett Favre. When you sit behind a guy who never misses a snap, like he is always there, you're driven, your competitive nature is molded completely different. Like, Aaron Rodgers, after going down last year and then going down this first week of the season, he had to be thinking, there's no way I can allow this to happen again. 2 years in a row, basically missing the entire season, I have to be able to come back out here and give my team a boost. What impressed me the most as far as his play is we always get enamored with the way he is accurate outside the pocket, the way he can extend the plays, the way he's just blows your mind outside the pocket. Aaron Rodgers, when he has to be a pocket passing quarterback, is the best pocket passing quarterback in the NFL. There's no question about it. He's so precise. He gets rid of the ball so quickly. He turned into a completely different player.
Because he didn't have his mobility. He was clearly limited.
Yes, he was limited.
And they did a great job in the broadcast of showing how he just looked differently when he was dropping back. And he had to do it all upper body. And he still can throw a 50-yard rope to Geronimo Allison.
Special.
Couldn't have handed it to him any better. And by the way, credit to Allison, especially the receiver out
Absolutely.
Here, because he made a heck of a play. Yep. As good of a pass as it was, that was still a contested catch. But this is across the field. It's 50 yards vertically, but it's another 30 yards horizontally. Like, you guys can draw the triangle and figure out what the hypotenuse is. Like, how many yards did that go in the air? Was that 75 yards in the air?
Like, do you see where the ball placement is, though?
You know what that throw reminded me of? That drill we see him do, where they throw it into the trash can.
Yeah.
And it was dropping it in the bucket. I think the Favre note is a great one. Because let's keep in mind, even once the test came back right, after missing last year with an injury, they're down 17-0 at halftime. They're down 20-0 before they get the ball back in the second half. It would not have been unreasonable to say, you know what? It's not worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm going to be compromised. I'm more likely to get injured playing in this game. Seriously, either the knee hurt again or because I can't move and Khalil Mack is terrorizing everyone. What if Khalil Mack Anthony bars me because I can't move? 20-0 with 25 minutes left. The game's over. Like, let me pack this one in. It'll be a good story that I can come play next week against Minnesota, a team I'm going to have to be fully operational for. But instead, and I wonder how much the Favre stuff was instructional for him. Like, it was a all-time performance from a player who never ceases to amaze.
Well, what I get from the soundbite and listening to him after the game is just insight into how he was feeling when he was knocked out of last year. And just him wanting to take that next step in terms of ownership and accountability. You heard him during the training camp when he was talking about the young players not giving a good look on the scout team. This is a different Aaron Rodgers that we're seeing now, and I think that's because he's had an opportunity to reflect being away from the game due to injury last season on how important it is to him, but how important for him it is to set the standard for everybody else in the organization and all of the players. I think they're trying to take it to another level, and Aaron Rodgers is looking at his career mortality and saying, I don't have that much longer with this group and playing at this kind of level. I've got to be able to take advantage of these gifts and we've got to try to win now. There's more urgency in what he's doing, and you can hear it in his voice. And now by him doing what he did last night, coming back into the game, Nick, as you mentioned, where it wouldn't have been outside of the realm of possibility for Mike McCarthy to hold him out, I think now that shows everybody on that team, this is what we're going to be about, and this is the standard now. If I can do it, everybody else is expected to do it. We're not handling anybody with kids' gloves. We've got a mission that we're trying to accomplish, and this is how you need to be accountable to the rest of your teammates.
Look, it all worked out great, and he did come out and have an incredible comeback. But were you surprised that McCarthy threw him back in? Because if he, I don't know, hurt himself further, if Khalil Mack got to him again, if something went awry and it turns out that tests were not as good as they were because he re-damaged his knee, I think a lot of people feel like that would have been a terrible mistake.
Well, Jenna, they were talking about it in the broadcast. Collinsworth and everybody in the booth, they were saying that this is starting to get to the point where you wouldn't bring Aaron Rodgers back into the game. But the fact that he did come back, I think that's a testament to him. But also, I'm looking at the Chicago Bears, and I'm wondering why Vic Fangio didn't pressure Aaron Rodgers more. Why didn't you bring more blitzes, particularly in the middle of the pocket, force him to get off the spot? Because you know that he's compromised. He doesn't have the mobility that you saw in the first half. You got to be aggressive and try to go after him. I felt like they left the door open for Aaron Rodgers to mount that comeback. And that's just something that you look back on and you say, that's unacceptable. The Chicago Bears gave one away last night in Lambeau Field.
I don't know if they gave one away or Aaron Rodgers took it from them. And this is why Mike McCarthy made the decision, and pretty much Aaron made the decision, I'm going back out there to play. Last year, I did a production meeting, and I was talking to Mike McCarthy, and he says, man, Aaron Rodgers, I mean, he's invaluable. Like, he allowed reality to really set in, like, wow, this is what life is like without an elite quarterback. Mm-hmm. So he experienced that last year. So it was a no-brainer. If Aaron says I can come back and play, I experienced losing and not having an opportunity to win, not putting my team in the best position, not being able to be afforded my entire playbook all of last year. So I'm definitely gonna let him play. To your point, when it comes to the Chicago Bears and pressuring him, you can't pressure Aaron Rodgers because he's going to pick you apart. He's seen every blitz. So the moment you start to show, or you even try not to show, he's going to catch you slip. That's what happened the last play of the game. He just hits Randall Cobb on a quick little dunk, and he does the rest. A great quarterback, you can't really blitz and attack him when he can be mobile. Get it, he wasn't. But when he gets the ball out as quickly as Aaron Rodgers, it's nothing you can really do.
I agree with you, Greg, but I'm going to say this. You were up by 17 points going into the fourth quarter.
So you have to do something.
I give you a touchdown to knock your quarterback down again. Because yes. I'm trying to knock you out of the game. That's what I'm going to do. I can afford to give up a big play if that means putting Aaron Rodgers on the ground again.
If Kaiser's coming back in, I give you. They would have just given him 14 points. Yeah. If Kaiser's going to play the rest of it. Aaron Rodgers took the field with 9:14 left in the third quarter because the Bears got the ball to start the second half, drove, long drive, got a field goal. In that moment, they were down 20-0. He knew he was going to touch the ball at best four more times. You were going to have to score at least 21, probably more. Field goal, touchdown, touchdown, touchdown. He touched it a fifth time to take knees and game over. In those drives, he was 17 of 23 for 270 yards, three touchdowns, no picks, and picked everyone apart. Yes. On a bum leg. Like, that is make-believe stuff. And for him to do it, and by the moment Allison came down with that touchdown, I think all of us watching were like, this dude gonna do this, right? Yep. Like, my only concern was, would the defense get the stops? And the defense almost let up at the very end, but thanks to some unfortunate for the Bears play calling at the end, they let him off the hook, and now you're down six. You're down six, and Rodgers has the ball. If I didn't check the live odds in, like, online betting, but I bet you down six with the ball, the Packers were the favorites in that game. That's only the case with him and Brady.
That's it.
Every other quarterback in the league, they're significant underdogs. It is a pleasure to watch this guy.
Absolutely fantastic game last night. Greg, stick around. Coming up on the other side, why did the Steelers lay an egg against the Browns? That's next. First things first. Back here, first things first, time for Say What? The Jags got the win over the Giants, but had to overcome 119 yards of penalties in the process. Jags coach Doug Marrone says that could be an issue in the future. Say what?
We know that we can be better than that. And, you know, at the end of the day, we were able to get the win. But, you know, if you keep, you know, on that track, that stuff will bite you in the ass. Yeah, first am I allowed to say that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Say it, then ask for permission.
Shout out to my guy from the Bronx just coming out there and just saying how it is, man. I love Doug Marrone. I love that attitude with this team. Listen, it was a sloppy football game in MetLife Stadium, and he knows it. They got out of there with one. I mean, the Giants had opportunity after opportunity and blew all of them, including but not only the muff punt at the end by Kalen Clay. But, I mean, it was a sloppy football game, but the Jags did just enough to get the win.
Yep.
All right, let's move on with Greg Jennings here on set. Browns hosting the Steelers yesterday. Browns looking for the first win in what felt like forever. Taking on a Steelers team without L. Bell. No Le'Veon Bell in this one. This game closer than the Steelers would have liked. It went to overtime, tied at 21, and that's where this game stayed. Bell's replacement, James Conner, had 192 total yards and two touchdowns, while quarterback Ben Roethlisberger had five turnovers. Head coach Mike Tomlin spoke about the joys of a tie after the game.
You know, it's an awkward feeling after a game like that. You know, you don't know what to feel or to say or to think, you know. I'm appreciative of the efforts of the men, obviously. It was some extraordinary effort at times. We got to play better. Got to play better to ensure victory.
I mean, you felt like we had a chance. Our defense did a great job of giving us that chance. It's just frustrating that you can't make the plays down the stretch. We didn't make them.
We got to play better all the way around is what I told our football team. It's just not where we want to be yet. You know, again, it's not preseason football. It's National Football League. It's regular season. We got to continue to get better. But again, I think the guys can see that we're an improved football team, but there are some areas we got to clean up and clean up fast.
Craig, you know, the Browns were like, we didn't lose, we didn't lose, we didn't lose. Let's talk about it from the Steelers' perspective to start off. How concerning was their performance in this tie against the Browns?
For me, it's concerning. It's very concerning. And I'll start with Ben Roethlisberger. The most important player on the field, and you turn the ball over five, you just can't do that. For me, when I look at Ben Roethlisberger, as great a quarterback, as great as a career that he's had, he turns the ball over. He's going to give the opposing opponent at least two, maybe three extra possessions every single game. You cannot do that. When you're playing in a game like this, with the conditions the way they were, the hierarchy of the game, it's protect the football.
Especially when you got a 21-7 lead in the fourth quarter.
As a quarterback, you're getting in the huddle, Chris, and you're telling everybody, guys, protect the football. You're telling your young running back, two hands on the football. And you continue to be the mishap when it comes to turnovers, getting stripped, throwing errant passes. I need to see Ben Roethlisberger play better consistently. This is why the Pittsburgh Steelers struggled yesterday, because of their leader, Ben Roethlisberger. He just didn't perform at a high level.
Listen, since 04, since when Big Ben came into the league, there's only been three quarterbacks that have at least, other than Big Ben, three five turnover games, right? That's in 15 years. Big Ben's got two of them in a year.
Yep.
He had a five turnover game against the Jags. He had one. The only five turnover games that I know of in the last year plus in the NFL is the famous Peterman game. And now
you
two.
Mean the half.
Right, the half. And now two by Big Ben. And the timing of the turnovers. You're up 21-7. James Conner, who had an excellent game, he fumbles. They end up, it's 21-14. But now it's 21-14, late in the fourth quarter. Big Ben fumbles, allows them, they end up tying the game. And then at the end of the game, in the end of overtime, when the Browns punt the ball away with a minute 30, they are saying, we're taking the tie. Like, they could have gone for it on 4th and 10 and said, we don't want a tie, but they, I think, intelligently thought, tie is better than a loss. We'll punt it away, know that best we can do is a tie. Nope. Big Ben put them in position to lose. If Myles Garrett doesn't have a block in the back on the return, the Browns, the story today is the Browns won. They would have had the ball at the 9-yard line, either run it in or kick a field goal. I think the field goal would have had a much better chance from there than from where they ended up kicking it from. That's brutal by him. Like, all this noise surrounding L. Bell, all this noise surrounding Mike Tomlin, this is the highest paid guy on the team, future Hall of Fame quarterback, who told everyone who'd listen, I'm in my best shape, I'm ready to play 5 more years, ready for my best season. And you start off with 5 turnovers against a Browns team that couldn't force a turnover to save its damn life last year. That's brutal. That's why they were in this position, to go along with the Browns being a better team than they were last year.
Yeah, it's the exact opposite of what we're seeing from Aaron Rodgers, right? Both quarterbacks came out and they were vocal about trying to set a standard and about what they were going to come into this season about. But Aaron Rodgers actually showed us by coming out in that second half and having that type of performance. Ben Roethlisberger showed us what he's about by what he did in the fourth quarter and overtime. So when you look at the two teams, it's not a surprise to me to see the Steelers with not complacency, but a lack of urgency in critical situations, in critical phases of the game. And the Cleveland Browns did just enough not to lose that game. Now, they had an opportunity to win that game at the end, but I think there were some mistakes by them. Turnovers by Tyrod Taylor. I didn't think he was great in terms of his pocket awareness either. But in terms of what the Cleveland Browns look like as a team, I think they have some positives that they can build on from this game. Myles Garrett looks legit as a pass rusher.
From that one mistake I mentioned, he was unreal.
I mean, Nick, I'm right there with you in thinking that he's going to be one of those players that we talk about with the Defensive Player of the Year Award. Mm-hmm. Like, he's at that level. But if you're Ben Roethlisberger, you can't let that game, the complexion of that game, change in the fourth quarter. You're a championship-level quarterback. You got to go out there and play like it. If that's the expectations for the Steelers this season, they've got to get more from their guy.
We'd be remiss if we didn't mention L. Bell, who was at home, I'm sure, watching this to see your replacement, James Conner, come in. James
Conner. Monocle.
James Conner comes in and has a good game. He has a good game for him. You wonder if, because he had a great game and the Steelers lost, was that good for L. Bell?
Tied, rather.
They didn't win. Or not as good for L. Bell. Did it seem like they needed him, or maybe they don't need him?
Let me say this. They need Le'Veon Bell. I don't care how well James Conner plays, they need Le'Veon Bell. It was not, however, good for Le'Veon Bell, because you, in this league, and Chris, you know this, anytime you can play and you allow someone else the opportunity to play and they shine, it takes a little bit more light off of you. And you just can't allow somebody to get that opportunity. He sees the moment. Absolutely, I'm excited for him. But Le'Veon Bell is a necessity to this football team if they're going to make the type of run that we expect and that they expect to have and make this year.
Listen, all credit to James Conner. I kind of scoffed at the idea of what the linemen were saying, that he could do what L. Bell does. And I don't know that, in fact, I know that I don't believe he can do it over a long sample. Mm-hmm. But yesterday he was great. He had 36 touches. He had 192 yards. He had 2 touchdowns. He had the bad fumble late, which you can't do, but he played an exceptional game for a guy whose previous big game was 4 carries for 26 yards. He had a high workload in awful conditions, and he stepped up. And so all the credit in the world to him. L. Bell, that if people can laugh, like, he, as soon as the game ended, he tweeted out the emoji with the monocle on it, and then he was like, no, it was no shade. I just had never seen a tie before.
Stop it.
I mean,
L. Bell.
I don't believe it. And it feels like it's getting tougher and tougher for him to go back into that locker room if you're tweeting that out right after your teammates played a 4-hour game in those conditions.
Does he come back? Yes or no?
Next. At some point.
No, he's coming back this season because he wants that accrued year so he can be a free agent next year.
Yes, indeed.
All right, Greg, stick around. Coming up, why weren't the Giants able to get it done versus the Jags? Next. Now, first things first. Back here on First Things First, we're talking Giants and Jags. This one was billed as the Odell Beckham versus Jalen Ramsey matchup. And even though Odell got the best of that one, he caught 11 passes for 111 yards. Solid first game for Saquon Barkley as well. But the Giants fell to the Jags 2015 in their season opener. Greg, was this game more about the Jaguars' defense or the Giants' lack of offense?
Really both, but I'm going to stick to the offensive side of the ball. When I look at how many opportunities the Giants had offensively to capitalize and to put points on the board, and they did not. And it all starts, again, with Eli Manning. When I look at Eli Manning and what he was not able to do, with all the weapons that he has on that football field, you have a Saquon Barkley out of the backfield that can run the ball now. You have Evan Ingram, Shepard. You have your guy, Odell Beckham, back, who did have 11 catches, who could have had more because of the way that Ramsey was even playing him, wasn't really pressing him, giving him cushion. I need to see Eli Manning be more accurate, step into the pocket, and be more decisive and have a presence about him that tells me I'm fearless. Anytime you get pressure around Eli Manning, he like gets happy feet and he starts letting the ball go a little too quick. And what year is this for Eli Manning?
This is year 15. 15?
Like, I can't see that out of my veteran quarterback. I need to see more poise in the pocket, and Eli Manning just doesn't have it for me.
It's hard to have poise in the pocket when you're not confident that the guys in front of you are going to keep you upright. And that's exactly what we saw from the opening offensive snap. Ereck Flowers penalized on two consecutive plays that took away positive gains for that offense. Nate Solder had his hands full all day with Yannick Ngakoue. He was also penalized in this game. For me, it starts with the Giants' offensive line. Their inability to consistently keep a clean pocket for Eli Manning is what's going to be the Achilles heel for this offense. Everybody understands the skill position players that the Giants have. You can stack them up against anybody. But if you try to game plan for the Giants, it has to start with taking away Eli Manning's ability to distribute the football. That means putting pressure on him. That's exactly what the Jags did yesterday. And everybody wants to say Saquon had a great day. Saquon had a splash play. He had that explosive 68-yard run. But by and large, he was ineffective in that ballgame.
But that one splash play, that's what you draft him for. You don't think Saquon's going to be a guy that gets you 5 yards every carry. You think he's a guy that might break one or two of those a game. Listen, the offensive line was bad. I agree with you. However, here's what the Jags did in the second half on offense. Punt, 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 quarter break. Punt, 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 punt. The Jags' offense generated 13 points. Wait, but they won 20-15. Oh, yeah, because Eli threw a pick six.
Yep.
Like, the offensive line was bad, but I saw Odell running open for two touchdowns and get missed. I saw Odell have to do the rare diving catch, diving towards the line of scrimmage when he was running open because it was such a bad pass. This is going to be a year of truth for Eli Manning, because while the offensive line is not good and they are facing a dominant front in Jacksonville.
Not good is an understatement.
Well,
awful.
I want to see how they look against a front that's not Jacksonville, because I don't think they're as bad as last year. But Eli's got all the other weapons around him. And Odell, despite having Jalen on him, Odell was great. Yep. Yesterday, 11 catches, over 100 yards with Jalen matched up on him. You told
seven,
me.
Seven times. It was seven targets. Odell had five receptions for 75 yards, a 106 passer rating.
Right, so Odell won that matchup. If they don't have the pick six, they win. If they can generate any type of offense in the second half, they win. I get it. The Jags are great, and Miles Jack's great, and that front's great. But at some point, like, the Giants quarterback's got to make some positive plays, even in under duress.
Yes, Nick, you're right. But also, Evan Ingram and Sterling Shepard have got to come to the party, too.
Sure.
They had some critical drops in the second half of that game that cost them drives that could have put points on the board. So that's a part of this as well. But you put this on Eli Manning. I can't get to Eli Manning until we address the issues with the offensive line. And it's four new starters from a year ago. This group was supposed to be much improved. I didn't see that improvement in yesterday's game.
See, I go straight to Eli Manning because I'm under the impression that if I have a good quarterback, and we all would say Eli Manning is a good quarterback.
He's supposed to be.
He can win a Super Bowl.
He can win, exactly.
I got a piece of jewelry for
him. He has a couple pieces. Yeah. You have to know I have to be better. I have to get the ball out a little quicker because I know I'm not going to have to protect, especially against this front. You know that going into this game. And so when you start to get pressured, we look at Aaron Rodgers, who was limited. He understood, like, and the line started picking up blocks and they started protecting him a little bit better in that second half. But he started to know, and he always is fully aware, I got to get the ball out. Timing is of paramount, is paramount now, right now. And I got to tell my receivers, let's shorten up these routes. Let's get out the breaks a little quicker so I can get the ball out of my hands and take some of the pressure off of the offensive line. When you know you're weak somewhere, your quarterback has to kind of counter that with his play. And Eli Manning, he doesn't do that for me.
All right, Greg, Chris, thanks guys so much.
Thank you.
For joining us.
Amen.
We got to take a break. Coming up, Chris Carter back with us for the rest of the show. Next on First Things First. Welcome back to First Things First. We now welcome in our guy Chris Carter from Florida. CC, you called the longest game in NFL history. You're welcome to the NFL broadcast booth moment. How do you feel?
Well, it was a long day. I mean, you're at the stadium. I got to the stadium, I think, at 9:30 in the morning, and I think I got in the car last night at 8 o'clock. It's a great opportunity with Fox. I appreciate to be able to call game. It's probably the hardest skill, the most information, meeting with the coaches. It was exciting. It was exciting to be at an NFL stadium for game day. So it's an experience that I can say that I will cherish, something I've never done before.
Well, it was fun to watch.
You were great, brother. I'm glad to have you back, but you were really great.
Good stuff. Okay, turning to our big story this morning, CC, the comeback for the ages, Aaron Rodgers versus the Chicago Bears. Early scare for Rodgers as he had to be carted off the field in the second quarter with a leg injury. Came back with his team down 20 and showed the world what brilliant football looks like, throwing 3 second-half touchdown passes, all while still hobbled with that injured leg. Suffice to say, Packers went on to win the game. Rodgers spoke about his epic performance after the game.
This is what we're paid to do. You know, we're paid to deal with injuries and play through them. That's what everybody's doing and will be doing throughout this season. That's the measure of a teammate, is what are you willing to put on the line for your team. And to me, it's a no-brainer. Being out there is special. The ovation from the crowd lifts you up, gives you the energy, the momentum of the game, and you feel the tide turning is special. This is definitely go down as one of my favorite memories. Playing behind Brett Favre for 3 years, you realize you gotta be tough to play this position. So you gotta, in that situation, it's about coming back out and leading. And if you can do it and deal with the pain, you should be out there.
All right, see, we talked about this all morning. How remarkable did you think Aaron Rodgers' performance was last night? To do it the way he did it and injured, no less, really being on one leg there.
Yeah, it's a tremendous credit to the profession. I think Aaron made some great points as far as what allows you to get to this point. Number one, being I watched Brett Favre, and Brett Favre had far more significant injuries than Aaron had. So as a young football player, he learned the mental toughness that it plays the position. He was able to see it firsthand. I can guarantee you that Aaron, there were several times where he grabbed his helmet and he started warming up. When Brett was still the quarterback, he thought he was going to go in there, but Brett would continue on. And we hadn't seen a quarterback like Brett. And then we saw Peyton Manning. And then now we see Aaron Rodgers pull this off last night. It's also a credit to professional football players and how they go about their jobs. People always question that with guaranteed money, would NFL players change? Well, Aaron Rodgers last night, he made a statement. He's got $98 million guaranteed. There's no reason besides him being a good teammate, him being just the baller and the overall mental toughness. That's the only thing that brings a person back onto the field the first game of the season. You got $100 million guaranteed. So even if he goes to the house, his money's guaranteed. So for me, the overall mentality, and that's why I really push for guarantees in contracts. I don't believe it will change the game. I believe football players, their mentality is totally different than basketball and baseball. And Aaron Rodgers, he's an exceptional player from a talent standpoint. But I'm talking about the mentality. I'm not going to let my fans down. I'm not going to let my coaching staff down. I'm not going to let my teammates down. And that's what I saw last night. Not only one of the greatest talents we've ever seen, but these are the intangibles that we want to see in our great football players. And Aaron Rodgers just gave us a glimpse of why we call him the greatest player in the game today.
And see, I mean, I thought it was impressive that he mentioned Favre there, because it is instructive that he learned from the ultimate NFL Ironman, a guy that has what I believe to be one of the few truly unbreakable records in all of sports, with Favre's consecutive game started streak at that position. Now, Rodgers obviously can't match that. I mean, he missed a half dozen games last year, but what he can do is show his team that even down 20-0 with 25 minutes left, on one leg. I'm going to go out there because I think I give us a chance to win. And the moment he threw that pass to Geronimo Allison, and I don't know if there's another human being on the planet that on one leg or maybe even on two, but certainly on one, can throw that pass with that precision and hell of a play by Allison on the back end of it, I felt like the Packers were going to win. As long as the defense could get stops, I felt like the Packers were going to score every time Rodgers got the ball. He had four drives in the second half. They went field goal, touchdown, touchdown, touchdown. He was 17 of 23 with 270 yards against a defense that in the first half had made him look bad and made Kizer look, well, a lot like DeShone Kizer. And the Packers' inability to hold the fort without him was not surprising, but Rodgers coming on and instantly turning around what had been a bad game for him and an awful game for his team, that is the stuff of legends. And it's one of, to me, it's one of the more memorable primetime regular season games in recent memory in the NFL.
Yeah, he's truly one of the great players. I mean, he also the rivalry with the Bears. He talked about Brett Favre being tough, but he mentioned also the rivalry with the Bears. If you look at his career stat lines, man, he's played as good against the Bears as any team in the NFL. And just go back to the Packers been playing football for 100 years. Their number one rival is the Bears. Their number two rival, or 1A and 1AB, is the Vikings. So, you know, when you get in those divisional games, first game of the season, he also sent a message to the Bears. Their young quarterback, Mitch Trubisky, all the excitement that they had around the Bears to let them know that I'm still the king of the NFC North, and if you guys want to win it, it's going to have to do it through me. So I thought it was an amazing message to send by one of our great players.
Hey, Chris. Chris Canty mentioned earlier in the show how surprised he was that the Bears took their foot off the metal, basically, if you will, the accelerator in this second half, and almost let the Packers back in and got really comfortable with that lead, and then you saw what happened. How do you feel about what the Bears did in that second half?
Well, no insult to Chris Canty, but no one lets anybody back into an NFL game. What happens is it's hard to maintain a lead. It's hard to maintain that intensity. If you look at the play that Khalil Mack made, if you look at the overall celebration, people thought that the game was over. But I watched Khalil Mack as he went back on the sideline. And to me, when everyone got on top of him after he scored the touchdown, and then they barely got back to the sideline, I thought he was stumbling on the sideline. I thought he was a little bit dizzy. I didn't think the game would get close again, but I wanted to watch him how the game went on. And after that celebration, I don't think he made a significant play the rest of the game. So they didn't let him back in the game. When you have a lead in the National Football League, it's hard to maintain that lead. Defensive coordinators, Fangio, I don't know why he didn't stay more aggressive, because that was the recipe to being successful. So it's a combination of things, but momentum, playing there at Lambeau Field, one of the special environments to play. If you get a quarterback like Aaron who limps back onto the field and they start making big plays, once the momentum swings, then it's hard to stop it.
Well, and what has occurred to me, you mentioned the Fangio part of it, and that I think that's a huge part of the story, that they had defensively a game plan early that they seemed to differ from late. And if there was ever a time to send pressure at Aaron Rodgers, it's when he's playing on one leg. It's when he clearly has limited mobility. What I saw from them offensively was it reminded me a lot of the Jags-Patriots AFC Championship game, where once they got done with the scripted plays, because if you remember that game, the Jags were moving the football at will. But once they got done with the scripted plays and it had to be more of in-game decision-making either by the coordinator, the coach, the quarterback, they struggled. I thought Matt Nagy's game plan was excellent. But as soon as we got through the first quarter, the offense stalled entirely. And then at the end of the game, when you have a third and one where a first down wins the game, you can take knees. And that's the time you take a shot to the end zone instead of running Jordan Howard, who had just run for 10 yards on second down. And you don't even consider going for it on the fourth down, where once again, a first down ends the game, and instead you're content kicking a field goal up only six and putting the ball back in Aaron Rodgers' hands. Those are things that this morning I think Chicago's looking at and saying, I wish we had done differently. I can't figure out Mac's lack of impact. You brought up the celebration. I didn't see that. That's interesting. I thought maybe it was about fitness from not being in training camp, that he was on something of a pitch count. But he had one tackle in the entire second half after being the dominating force of the game throughout the first half.
Anytime you have a short yardage game-winning situation, if the play doesn't work, you know what we do? We blame the offensive coordinator. Well, forget the offensive line. I guarantee you the play that they designed, it was a good play. So the play doesn't work, so let's blame the coordinator. Well, what about the running back a couple plays before that where he stepped out of bounds to stop the clock? As a young football team, the offensive coordinator's young. The quarterback is young. The head coach is young. You need to learn how to win football games. And that's what I saw in the end of this game. People always want to point fingers. This guy, that's a bad call. All the calls are good. If you don't execute, none of the calls are good. But you have to learn how to put games away. They had the opportunity. I thought they had a good game plan. Even when they had to have the drive moving down in the end, even though they didn't convert, but they ate up the time of possession there. They ate up a couple of their timeouts. They just need one more play to be able to get a victory. When you're a young football team and you've been losing for the last several years, you don't know those things. So that's what I saw come into play. A team that, how do I win a football game with a bunch of guys that haven't won games together?
All right, see, we want to make you feel real comfortable with the broadcast. We have 6 more hours left to go here on the show. So sit back, get comfortable. We're kidding. Coming up, Tom Brady's still getting it done at age 41. That's next on First Things First. Time now for stories to start your morning. The Bucs surprised the Saints with a 48-40 win behind 417 yards passing and 5 total touchdowns from Ryan Fitzpatrick. CeCe, how much did this surprise you yesterday?
Oh, it was a surprise. I know he was surprised. After the game, he got a message from his wife for talking to his kids. He's got 6 kids. He's got a couple sons, one Tate and one Brady. Tate, the 9-year-old, had to convince Brady to put the dad on his fantasy football team. Yeah. Dad didn't even know Brady was playing fantasy football. So he gets a perfect quarterback rating over 400 yards. Dad didn't even know his son put him on his fantasy team. So everyone, I hope they had Ryan Fitzpatrick on their fantasy team.
On the Bucs side of things, like on Fitzpatrick, we will see a couple games like this a year, maybe not quite to this standard, but really big games from Fitzpatrick. When he is pressed into duty due to injury or in this case suspension, he actually tends to be one of the better backups in the league. It's when those games convince a team to then make him a starter, a la the Jets, a la the Texans, that you then see the real Ryan Fitzpatrick. But credit to him. The Saints part of this was what was so surprising. This looked like 2014, 15, 16 Saints defense, not the 2017 Saints defense that was one of the big stories of the NFL season. What I guess shouldn't be surprising is the Saints losing their opening game of the year. 5 years in a row, they've started off at least 0-1. Remember last year, 0-2, before they turned everything around.
That is crazy. All right, moving on to Andrew Luck's debut. He threw for 319 yards and 2 touchdowns. But the Colts weren't able to get the win over the Cincinnati Bengals. Nick, what'd you make of Andrew Luck's performance?
I mean, this is a gutsy performance. He took one of the most brutal hits anyone took all weekend very early in this football game. He throws a pick on his first pass. A couple drives later, he takes a brutal helmet-to-helmet shot from Sean Williams. They got Williams ejected from the game. All he did after that was throw more passes than any player in the league yesterday. Look like the old Andrew Luck for the majority of time. And I think potentially was putting the Colts in position for another comeback win a la 2016 and 2014 Andrew Luck until Jack Doyle fumbled the football. I thought he looked very good in his first game action since January 1st of 2017. I was happy to see it.
Yeah, Luck looked very good. Limited talent that he's got around him as far as explosive players. You mentioned the big play at the end. I thought they were going to come back and win this game. Man, you got to give Luck credit, especially. Not a lot of guys coming back from that big hit early. Quarterbacks don't like to get hit, but we saw a couple heroic, courageous performances. We talked about Rodgers before. Luck was special, too, even though they lost.
All right, let's move on to Kirk Cousins' Vikings debut. He threw for 2 touchdowns and 244 yards in the win over the 49ers. See, is that about what you expected out of Cousins yesterday?
This is a good football team. He can't put too much pressure on himself. They're going to be about 3 to 5 games this year where maybe they can't get the game going, or maybe their defense maybe is not as stingy as they're used to, and they might give up some points. Those are the games where they need the veteran quarterback. But 240, 275 yards per game, keeping the turnovers down. We saw a couple touchdown passes. Nice and steady. That's what the Vikings would prefer from a quarterback.
And that one touchdown pass to Stephon Diggs is flatly a throw Case Keenum cannot make, and that is the type of throw they brought him there for. But the story of this game, as you alluded to, is the overall talent of this Vikings team. We saw Dalvin Cook back. He looked good. But the defense made play after play and made Jimmy G look bad, and I know we're going to get to him right now.
All right, speaking of Jimmy G, the other side of the ball, same game. Jimmy Garoppolo struggling in his season debut, throwing 3 picks in the loss. All right, Nick, what did you think of Garoppolo?
Listen, I expected something of a Garoppolo regression. I didn't expect it to this level. 3 picks, less than 50% completions, a quarterback rating sub-60. But this is against arguably the best defense in football. He also, there was a big moment in the game where he has his tight end Kittle wide open. It would have been a 50-plus yard gain, and Kittle just drops it. On the very next play, he makes his worst decision of the game that results in a pick 6. That two-play sequence could have swung the game, but this is the concern with Jimmy Garoppolo. The sample size was so small, and they have shown so much faith in him. He doesn't have great weapons around him, and the Vikings exploited all of that yesterday, see?
Nick, I told you, I warned you, I told you two quarterbacks that had outstanding 2017s that they would regress in 2018. Deshaun Watson, Houston Texans. I warned you. Jimmy Garoppolo, after we saw him going on his date in L.A. this offseason, I told you, watch a correction coming to him.
I was down on Jimmy before the date. I then actually got high on Jimmy after the date. You went in the opposite order. I think you were higher on him and then now. So, yeah, we were both worried about Jimmy Garoppolo headed into this season.
Yeah, his selection is not popular in the Twin Cities.
Bottom line, no more dates for Jimmy G. Finally, Patrick, I just stepped in.
Someone
Patrick,
who didn't regress.
Patrick Mahomes shined in week 1 against the Chargers, throwing 4 touchdowns, including 2 to Tyreek Hill. What'd you make of the Mahomes to Hill combo, Nick?
I mean, this looks to me like a quarterback to a number 1 wide receiver, Tyreek Hill. This Chiefs offense is as advertised, at least through week 1. Now, their defense...
Well, how many number 1 wide receivers do you have? You have Kelce. You told me Sammy Watkins is going to be a number 1 this year. Like, how many number 1 receivers do you have?
No. Kelce's a great tight end. Sammy Watkins is an excellent complement to the dynamic playmaker that is Tyreek Hill. But whatever the differentiation on number 1, number 2 wide receiver, what you have in Kansas City is an offense that is going to be incredibly difficult to stop for every team that they play this year. And when you have Andy Reid drawing things up, you saw some incredible creativity at the goal line and just enough plays defensively. This is a team that we thought going into the year, if Mahomes was good, could be the best offense in the league. And Mahomes didn't play a perfect game, but the slant to Tyreek Hill, his read on that where he's getting blitzed and then changes the arm angle to whip it to Tyreek Hill and then Tyreek Hill does the rest, that's an elite level play. Now that throw we just shown, he just kind of got lucky on it and Tyreek Hill went up and made a play.
Why are you laughing,
what's up, C? What else? Go.
Nick's talking about he changed his arm angle. Please.
What? On the slant? Do you think I'm wrong?
I see you. I see you with your in-depth analysis of your
you
Kansas
ain't
City
you
team.
You ain't here. So I'm sitting on this side, so I'm talking arm angle. What did you see?
You didn't even hear what he told about strategies for the wide receiver.
Absolutely.
He broke down the position.
Absolutely. So what's up, C?
This is what I know about young quarterbacks. Just be careful, all right? He's not in Canton. Yesterday was a good game. He's got good arm talent. He's got really good skilled guys around him. The offensive line, there's still going to be some question marks. And you're still going to have 3 to 4 games where he's going to look like a young player. So we play a 16-game schedule. He looked good in this game. The Chargers, they didn't have they didn't have Bosa out there playing, which would have helped them. And I'm still concerned about the Chiefs' secondary. Good opening start for Mahomes, though, and him changing his arm angle as he's in the pocket.
Absolutely. That's a good observation by you. One note about the Chargers, who I know a lot of people are very high on this year. What you forget, the Bosa injury is potentially huge, but let's hope he's going to be back because he's one of the best players in the league. What you saw from them there in the stadium yesterday is one of the reasons I was skeptical of their ability to succeed this year. When you have 8 games scheduled on the road, 1 game scheduled in London, and in your 7 home games, 3 or 4 of them are going to look like yesterday did, where the entire lower bowl is red, where the Los Angeles fans sell their tickets to the opposing team's fans that come into LA for a weekend. It's hard enough to win in this league. Right. If you never have a home field advantage, it can be almost impossible to win. I don't think that was the difference yesterday, but visually it was instructive to see a red lower bowl in Los Angeles when the Raiders come to town.
Yeah.
That's going to be black jerseys. Like, they're going to play a lot of road games at home, which can be very difficult for a team that, by the way, still doesn't have a
Nick, were the fans out there tackling? Did the fans kick Tyreek Hill that ball and on that special teams touchdown? Did they do that?
No, listen, the Chiefs are obviously
dominant. I just thought maybe my TV was broke.
The Chiefs are obviously such a dominant force, they didn't need that edge. I'm simply saying in the closer games, I don't think they're going to have the home field advantage that most teams across the league are able to enjoy at least 8 Sundays a year.
It's the quarterback angle. It's the arm angle.
All right, y'all watch the film.
I'm not going to be mocked
this for another second.
Moving on to the Patriots and the Texans now. Tom Brady and Deshaun Watson. Watson back after missing most of last year, and he struggled, as CeCe just alluded to, completing only 50% of his passes and turning the ball over twice in the Texans' loss. Brady, back after missing out on another Super Bowl win, didn't miss a beat, throwing for 277 yards and 3 touchdowns. Brady said after the game, New England can be even better moving forward.
I don't think we played, anywhere near what our capabilities are. So I think it's good to win, obviously. But, we got to do a lot better than that. I think just turn the ball over and not take advantage of some opportunities that we had out there. All of us probably look at the game and realize we could have done a lot of things differently.
I think it was terrible on my part. I just feel like you can put the L on me because I'd be way much better than what I showed today. Just my energy was low and just overthinking little things. But, we just got to capitalize in the red zone. Don't turn the ball over and just kind of continue to do what we do. Take it one play at a time, be on the same page, and just go from there.
CeCe, if there were questions about the Patriots' offense, we certainly didn't think there were going to be any questions about this Texans' defense. So how impressed were you by what the Patriots were able to do against Houston yesterday?
Well, I thought the Patriots would shore up the offensive line. I mean, they're well coached. There's a reason why you don't pay Nate Solder all that money. It's hard to manage the salary cap. So Dante Scarnecchia, best offensive line coach, I believe, in NFL. He shored up that just to give Brady enough protection. They're going to run the ball enough just so you can't tee off on them. I knew they would throw the ball, throw it short to a bunch of guys, try to get some catch and runs. And Gronk's going to have 8 to 10 receptions until Edelman gets back to be able to man the slot. This is how they play football. They've done it for a long, long time. It's systematic. They use different people, but Philip Dorsett got him involved in the game. That's what they're going to do, utilize his overall speed and quickness, try to get him the ball early. But, no, not surprised at all. I believe the Texans' defense, they still have question marks in their front 7. Like how good they're going to be on paper. Like at this point in his career, who is J.J. Watt? Clowney at this point in his career, who is he? Wenton Merciless, like is he still a good player? There's a lot of question marks about about Houston going into this game without Will Fuller as their quarterback. I'm not surprised. I mean, without Will Fuller. So I'm not surprised that the quarterback struggled in New England to start the season. I still believe he's going to have a good year, but I just believe people's expectations of Deshaun are just not realistic.
Yeah, as far as Deshaun goes, we talked about this last week, that the question wasn't will he regress? It's how much he will regress. If he didn't regress, like what he did through a six-game sample last year, it'd be the best. You extrapolate that over a career, oh, it's the best career in NFL history. So we knew he was going to fall back somewhat. Now, yesterday was a particularly bad performance by him. He fumbles the opening handoff. That was not done by the Patriots. That was a bad job by him. He missed a touchdown throw when the Texans, I think, intelligently went for it on fourth down. They just missed the throw. He had a bad interception. But to me, the bigger story is the Patriots, because we talked about their losses on offensive line. And all of a sudden, Brady only gets hit five times. Trent Brown looks good. And all the good words you and Coach Mangini have been saying about Dante Scarnecchia appear to be true. We talk about who's going to catch balls with Edelman out of the game. Well, evidently the answer is eight different guys. Philip Dorsett, we were talking about Dorsett and Cordarrelle Patterson, one of them coming onto the scene as a former first-round pick for another team that gave up on him. Well, Dorsett had the best game of his NFL career yesterday, where he looked like a legitimate NFL starting caliber wide receiver. And not surprisingly, everyone in the world knew going into this game the Pats were going to heavily feature Rob Gronkowski, and the Texans had no answer for it. We knew that Gronk was going to be Brady's first and second option, and repeatedly he was, whether it was the touchdown early, the huge play at the end of the first half that probably wasn't a catch but was called a catch and set up the touchdown. Like, Gronk made play after play, and Tom Brady was Tom Brady. The Deshaun Watson had a bad game, and he at least took accountability for it afterwards, but I think it was more about the Patriots answering whatever questions we had going into the season on their offensive line and even in their receiving core.
So, Nick, let me ask you, one of the things we talked about going in when we talked about this matchup was the coaching differential between what Bill Belichick brings to the table and what Bill O'Brien brings to the table, and that manifested itself in the game. You were all fired up about it this morning.
Well, you saw, listen, I mean, we said last week that going into most games, Bill Belichick has about a 3-point schematic edge on his opponent, and Bill O'Brien in his career has shown you that Monday to Saturday, he is, I think, a good to very good NFL coach, but on Sunday, something gets away from him. And on the play I alluded to with Gronkowski, that, listen, it should have been ruled an incomplete pass. They should have buzzed down to have it reviewed. But the last line of defense there is Bill O'Brien and his three timeouts with 40 seconds left on a huge play to call timeout and give them time to review it when you see the Patriots running up to the line. It's not only that he didn't do that and it led to a touchdown, it was also that after the game when he was asked about it, he said, "It's not my job." It is absolutely your job. It's no one else's job. Like, the refs screwed up. You had a chance to fix it, give them a chance to fix it. And then at the end of the game, like, you're down 14 points with 4 minutes left and you're punting the football. That is the football version of waving the white flag. Now, what was frustrating to me, C, was Deshaun didn't play well. I didn't think O'Brien made great decisions. Deshaun, the young quarterback, after the game, takes full accountability for all of it. Says, "I've got to play better. This is on me." O'Brien, the head coach, says, basically, "You guys don't know what you're talking about. That's not my job." You would expect your coach to at least be on par with accountability as your 23-year-old quarterback.
Well, with you working in Houston, I think sometimes when you follow teams locally, I think you can be far more critical. You see how teams operate. You kind of see some of the stuff behind the scenes. That's not my story from a national level. I know about Bill O'Brien's reputation. I think that he's mismanaged the clock in tough situations. He hasn't necessarily made the best decision. I still think, you know, the jury's still out on him how good he's going to be as a head coach. In this situation, what I think he was trying to explain, and not knowing their system, how they do things, they have someone in the booth that's going to tell the coach if they believe they have enough information to review a play during real time. Now, when you have a 2-minute drive, yes, you can wait to depend on New York, but the players in the NFL, the offensive players, are smart. They know anytime there is a play that could go either way, all the teams are immediately going to the huddle, rushing the referees, because they know it is kind of the system. And that's the way you're able to beat the system, is by getting the play off, because once a snap is, you can't review it. So he's in a tough spot. If he doesn't get the right information, or the people tell him, "We don't have a good look at it, we don't know what it looks like," it's a judgment call up to the coach. But as far as the quarterback stepping up and saying it was his fault in the game and the coach, I don't have no problem with that, because at the end of the day, the coach is the only one who takes the loss. When you look at a coach, he's judged on what is his record. After the game, you don't see players, hey, Chris, what's your record? They talk about the coach and his record. So it's not like Deshaun is every game is, oh, man, this is going on his personal resume. So I don't have a problem with that. I think sometimes when you're local and you've been close to people, you see little things, and those are little things that are more apt to set you off. Now I'm a part of the national media, so I don't see it that way. So I don't think that was the difference in the game.
All right, we got to take a break. Coming up on the other side, what went so wrong for the Steelers yesterday? That's next on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, the Cleveland Browns looking for their first win in 100 years, taking on a Steelers team without Le'Veon Bell. This one was close, like literally as close as you could get. It went to overtime, tied at 21, and that's where this game stayed. Bell's replacement, James Conner, great day, 192 yards, two touchdowns, while Ben Roethlisberger turned the ball over five times, or not as great a day. Head coach Mike Tomlin spoke about the joys of a tie after the game.
You know, it's an awkward feeling after a game like that. You know, you don't know what to feel or to say or to think, you know. I'm appreciative of the efforts of the men. Obviously, it was some extraordinary effort at times. We got to play better. Got to play better to ensure victory.
I mean, you felt like we had a chance. Our defense did a great job of giving us that chance. It's just frustrating that you can't make the plays down the stretch. We didn't make them.
We got to play better all the way around, is what I told our football team. It's just not where we want to be yet. You know, again, it's not preseason football. It's National Football League. It's regular season. We got to continue to get better. But again, I think the guys can see that we're an improved football team, but there are some areas we got to clean up and clean up fast.
All right, CeCe, let's look at this first from the Steelers' perspective. How concerned were you with their performance yesterday, especially out of Ben Roethlisberger?
Well, I'm not shocked. I mean, the Pittsburgh Steelers, I've been trying to warn you guys that they're a team that they create so many distractions within themselves. Le'Veon Bell deciding, after telling his teammates, the offensive line last week, that he was going to report on Wednesday and then not reporting at all. It just becomes the turmoil inside, because can they overcome themselves? They're a talented team. The Browns are much improved, but this is about the Pittsburgh Steelers. If they are one of the Super Bowl favorites, then that's how they open up week number one. Ben Roethlisberger, remember he told you, hey, man, my arm is feeling better. I'm in the best shape of my life and everything. Oh, yeah, let's start the season with five turnovers. How you like that? So I think the Pittsburgh Steelers, to me, as a football team, they've been immature. They always don't have everyone on the same page, general manager, head coach, quarterback, running back, and it turns over onto the field. They should have lost this game. Great effort by the Browns, being able to come back. Great touchdown by Josh Gordon. Amazing catch there to be able to get his feet down, to be able to tie up the game late. And then in overtime, man, the Browns had opportunities. Just like the Bears. We talk about teams that have lost for most of these young careers of these players. They don't know how to win games. The Browns were the same way. Several opportunities didn't take advantage of them. This is a game that once Pittsburgh, they had the lead, allowed the Browns back in. The Browns should have won this game.
I mean, you're absolutely right. And both teams should leave this game feeling like, how the hell did we not win it? On Pittsburgh's side of things, you have a 21-7 lead with less than 8 minutes left and the ball, and you end up going to overtime. How? Well, James Conner, who had all credit to James Conner. He had like 190 yards from scrimmage, 36 touches, heavy workload. He was excellent. The one big mistake he made was Myles Garrett coming around, forcing a fumble. So now instead of 21-7, it's 21-14. The next drive, Ben Roethlisberger fumbles the football, and now we're going to overtime. But Big Ben wasn't done turning the ball over. In overtime, the Browns punt the ball with 90 seconds left in overtime, essentially conceding, listen, a tie's better than a loss. We don't want to lose here, so we're going to punt the ball away. The only thing you can't do there if you're the Steelers is turn it over, Big Ben turns it over again, and if not for Myles Garrett's block in the back, the Browns have a chip shot field goal from probably the 6 or 7 yard line to win the game. So in that regard, the Steelers got lucky. Like, I understand the point about distractions, and I understand that Le'Veon Bell and that situation, what was said this week leading up to it, did not put the Steelers in the best framework to be ready to play a football game or win a football game. But with all that said, they got a 2-touchdown lead against the Browns, and they are ready to win the game, and they do everything possible to not win the game, and only because the Browns, like you said, haven't yet quite figured out how to win, did the Steelers even get a tie out of this. Now, I don't think the Browns are a terrible football team. I think the Browns are going to beat some good teams this year, but this is a game Pittsburgh had full control of in terrible conditions despite not having Al Bell, and they let it get away from them to where it ended up being a 21-21 tie.
See, let me ask you a question about Al Bell. Should he be concerned at all with what he saw from James Conner yesterday?
No, he's not going to come back based on someone's performance. He's concerned about his overall workload. He's concerned they're going to use him too much for the $14 million. They're going to maybe give him 400 carries. Well, so be it for $14 million. That's what you got to do. No. If whatever his mind's whatever he was thinking about going into week number one, that doesn't change going to game number two. The guy had a good – they're professional players. If you don't show up to work, they will go out and get someone who can do your job. That's why I always tell you guys, come to work. There are competent people out there that can do this thing. So, no, he's not going to change. Him and his agent have come up with this theory that this year they're going to try to maintain their health. So let's see where it goes. It could go anywhere. He could show up tomorrow. He could show up week number 10.
And I was surprised. I thought he was going to show up Saturday to where he couldn't play in week one but would still get paid. But once you forfeit the first game check, I have no reason to believe he's not going to forfeit another one. So I'm interested to see when he does show up. I just want to give credit to two guys who played outstanding football games and were game changers yesterday. Myles Garrett not only had 2 sacks, he had the 2 forced fumbles. And right now, the best Watt brother in football is not JJ, it's TJ. TJ had 4 sacks, 4 additional tackles for a loss, and on the potential game-winning field goal, he's the one who got a hand on it to block it to preserve the tie. A tremendous game from TJ Watt.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.